Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast with me, your host, Danny Kennedy, and you're listening to episode number 51. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast, guys. We've got a massive show today. I'm joined by a guest from the United States who's actually out in Australia at the moment on the Gold Coast. His name is Austin Current. He's a guy that I've looked up to in the fitness industry for a while now. We actually connected for the first time on YouTube, I think it was. And as I mentioned, he's out in Australia, so we've linked up a Skype session. And today we're going to be talking about all things to do with muscle hypertrophy in regards to training, which I know is a big topic and a very popular one, and also nutrition for fat loss, which is obviously always a winner. So pleasure to have Austin on the show today. He's actually an IFBB pro in the men's physique division. He has a ridiculous physique. He's very knowledgeable when it comes to training and nutrition. So let's get things underway and get into the interview. All right, guys, welcome to the show. Austin, welcome to the show, man. Pleasure to have you on. Really appreciate you taking the time to join us today, man.
I'm humbled, man. I'm humbled to be on it. I've listened to a few episodes myself, and I'm happy to be on it.
Perfect. And guys, I gave you a quick rundown of kind of a bit of info about Austin before and how we kind of got to know each other, I guess, through social media and stuff. But man, do you want to give the listeners a bit of info about yourself, what you do, where you come from? And I did mention that you're out in Australia, so maybe even mention a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, so my name is Austin. I'm 23 years old. I guess we'll start with sort of professional things, and maybe we can go a little more personal. So professionally, I am a full-time online coach, training and nutrition consulting, or whatever you want to call it. And I'm also an IFBB professional physique athlete, and I turned pro, would be 3 years ago now. I turned pro when I was 20. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm originally from the U.S. and like I was telling Danny before we hopped on here, you know, my wife and I are big travelers. So this is about the 15th country that I've traveled to and the third continent that I've actually lived on. So it's been an awesome ride. It's been an awesome journey. And you know, I think just to start out here, I think I just want to kind of plug into your guys' ears that, you know, you don't have to be so zoned in and focused and locked in on that one goal so much that you miss out on living your life.
That's so awesome. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, man. So yeah, that's basically me. I have a 4-year degree in exercise science, physiology, and sports nutrition, and then I also am a certified strength conditioning specialist through the NSCA. The U.S., I think it's, I don't know if it's just U.S. or international, but so that's my professional.
Cool. So, guys, he knows his shit. He knows what he's talking about.
I like to think so.
So, guys, as I mentioned before, I wanted to break today's episode up into two sections, really. The first one we're going to talk about, I guess, specifically muscle hypertrophy, training for muscle hypertrophy. And then the second side of things, we're going to speak about nutrition and specifically nutrition for fat loss. So, Austin, I'm just going to run through a few questions here, man, and then we can just elaborate on each one. So the first thing I wanted to ask is, do you believe that there's a certain rep range that yields the best muscle building results? And if so, what do you think it is? Because there's a lot of, I guess, misconception, but also there's a lot of just different theories out there about what rep range you should be lifting in to build muscle, and if there even is a special rep range that's going to help you build muscle compared to others. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think... So this is, I'm going to keep everything super broad. You know, I don't like to be the one that just sits here and quotes research articles that I read once and, you know, came across one day. You know, I want everything to be applicable and really have a take home. So I really don't think there is this magical rep range by any means. I think you as the individual should train. If you want to be good at a rep range, you should train in that rep range. So if you want to be good from the 6 to 12 rep range, and I think that honestly is probably what I find to be the best rep range for hypertrophy, I would say train in that rep range the most. If you want to be good at strength, do strength reps like 1 through 5. If you want to be good at hypertrophy, you know, work in that rep range, 6 to 12, maybe 15 reps, and just get good at that. But I would say, honestly, the take home, you know, there's not a magical rep range that you guys should be training in particularly. I just think you should spend time where you want to be good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think one of the mistakes I've made when I was first started out training anyway is that I was really good at that 15 to 20, even up to 30 rep range, which I thought was a good thing because I was, you know, feeling the burn and all that type of crap and thought that that's what was going to help me get more definition and stuff like that. But there's been a few studies done, and I know you don't really want to quote studies or whatever, but I just want to kind of get your take on it is...
I'm absolutely... I love science. I'm definitely an evidence-based coach. I don't want to just sit here and quote them.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
I want you to, if you have something to bring up, absolutely, man.
Awesome. So there's a few things I've read, which I 100% agree with in regards to training with a lighter load for higher rep range, in the hopes of, you know, breaking down the muscle tissue a little bit more, getting more muscle hypertrophy compared to lifting in that 6 to 12 that we spoke about before with a heavier load. What's your take on it? Do you think that, that there's a place for higher rep range, like such, for example, 20 reps and plus?
Yeah, and I think, so there's, you know, there's multiple drivers of hypertrophy, and the mechanical stress part of it, and the metabolic damage part of it, like those parts of hypertrophy, I think there is merit to really sort of, you know, maybe at the tail end of your workout, sort of move into those rep ranges. If your goal is purely like muscle hypertrophy, I don't see it advantageous to work solely in that rep range. One, because I don't think you'll end up placing enough overall load and stimulus on the muscle as you should to kind of spark net new growth. You know, not to say that there's not going to be any muscle damage whatsoever, but I do think that, you know, maybe the muscle damage that you create, maybe, you know, I don't think you're adding enough load and stimulus on top of it to really kind of spark that new adaptation and new growth. So, and there's also, you know, there's a study that just came out that I read an analysis on today, which I really, really liked. And it kind of, I'm always learning and taking what I have. And, you know, my things, I'm huge in execution. I'm huge in creating, you know, damage to the muscle. And, you know, this study that just came out kind of looked at how relevant is muscle damage to hypertrophy in the big picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, they found that the main drivers were volume and frequency. Mm. And, you know, it's something that you and I both know, and I think most of your listeners probably know that they hear volume and they heard frequency thrown around a lot. And, you know, I think if you can create more muscle damage as that third component, I think you're just creating an awesome recipe for success in creating muscle growth overall.
Definitely.
So it's kind of my take on that.
Yeah. Another component of that muscle damage, a big buzz, I guess, in the training side of things a few years back was time under tension. A lot of people kind of talking about how time under tension was the key to muscle growth, not so much overall load, I guess, or overall lifting volume. Do you do much time under tension training, like, you know, in regards to spending a longer period of time in the eccentric phase of a lift for hypertrophy, or do you prefer to focus on the amount of weight that you're lifting in a certain rep range and just stick to your kind of 2 to 3 second eccentric phase?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think, and time under tension is so relative, and it depends kind of which context you're looking at it in. And like you said, stick to the 2 to 3 second eccentric, which for most people, right? Like for you and, you know, maybe for you and me, like that's pretty normal eccentric, like being in full control of that eccentric motion and causing more of that muscle damage that we should be causing and creating more stability. You know, I think 2 to 3 seconds for a lot of people is a long time.
Yeah.
And that's the more I'm sort of getting myself out there and allowing more feedback on social media to happen as my growth, you know, my social media has grown. I'm seeing that a lot of people, where we're assuming people are in that kind of that thought of time and attention is pretty far off. You know, I think time and attention is very important. And I think the more we can fully spend time under tension and create tension on the working muscle,
yep.
The more we can drive that total volume and that total frequency to the muscle, you know, I think they're all connected in that way. And sort of, let me explain that. So we can have volume and we can have frequency at which we're hitting each muscle group, right? But if you can't place the volume specifically on the muscle group you're trying to, then you're not truly maybe equating as much volume on that muscle group as you think you
are.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's where the execution from my end and the time under tension does play a part. And that's being able to just maximize the basically the tension put on the target muscle.
The target muscle, yeah. And as you mentioned, the execution, guys, I will put all Austin's social media accounts and stuff in the show notes, but it's fair to say that your Instagram videos are blowing up at the moment. And I'm seeing more and more people start to show them now. But guys, definitely it's worth your time at the end of this episode to go to Austin's Instagram and have a look at some of these execution videos that he mentions here in regards to kind of incorrect and correct lifting form and actually getting that tension, the load on the target muscle compared to just going through the motions and doing the movement, which as you mentioned, if you're observing a general population gym, you see a lot of people, what they think are training a muscle group, are really not getting that exact load that they probably think that they are. So guys, definitely check out those videos after this. You might be surprised. You might have been doing a few exercises wrong your whole lifting career. The next thing I wanted to talk about was training splits. So firstly, what's been the most effective training split for you? And do you, for someone beginning or just starting out that wants to focus on muscle hypertrophy, what do you recommend for a training split?
Yeah, I think, and kind of going back to those drivers of hypertrophy, I think, you know, speaking in terms that you're working on execution, you're working on getting better at your lifting technique, and sort of deserving the right to make these judgment calls and start playing more with your training splits. I think hitting a muscle group at least two times per week is your best bet. And I think for beginners, I think hitting a muscle group two times per week is great. You know, start around maybe 10 to 12 sets per muscle group per week. So if you hit chest Monday and Wednesday or whatever you hit chest, we'll just say you hit it Monday and Wednesday. You know, maybe hit five working sets or six working sets on Monday, then hit five or six working sets for chest on Wednesday. And then, you know, see how you recover from that. You know, jot it down, note it. Did you recover? Did you not recover? Should you stay the same or should you increase?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of training is just kind of a guessing game. And as long as you take an intelligent approach to setting it up, I think you're already light years ahead of other people.
Yeah. And I think Austin mentions a good point there is when he mentions 5 to 6 working sets, guys, especially for someone that's new to the gym, that doesn't mean 5 to 6 sets on bench press, then 5 to 6 sets on cable flies, then 5 to 6 sets on push-ups, then 5 to 6 sets on decline bench. You don't need to go in and train like Ronnie Coleman and expect to see results, guys. And we've mentioned on the show before, like the typical bro split where you're training chest on a Monday and then you don't train it again till the next Monday is really not ideal, especially if you're a natural lifter. So in regards to that volume, like Austin just said, start with your 5 to 6 sets per muscle group. So that could be two sets on dumbbell incline press, and then 3 to 4 sets on barbell bench press, and then, like you said, monitor how you recover, your results, and then go from there, guys. There's no point going in and just smashing yourself on Monday and doing chest and then you're being sore for 3 days and not training again until the next week. 100%. The next one I wanted to talk about is compound exercises before isolation. I think I might know the answer to this already, but are you a fan of sticking to compounds before isolation, or do you like to throw in any pre-exhaustion type stuff or switch up the order at any stage?
Yeah, and again, it's context dependent, right? So I think overall, especially, you know, we're speaking to the masses here, the general population, you know, maybe some beginner competitors, and then maybe some advanced competitors. But at the end of the day, broadly speaking, I think that you should start with the most neurologically taxing movements first. Yep. And those tend to be multi-joint compound movements.
Yep.
So, you know, the last thing I want to do is completely, you know, especially if I'm training or have a client that's pretty beginner or maybe intermediate, and the last thing I want to do is completely debilitate them on the leg extension and then take them into the squat rack, you know? Yeah. That's a recipe for injury. And, you know, as you guys all know, the least amount of injuries we can, you know, have throughout our career, the better off we are.
Yeah.
And I think sort of anecdotally speaking, you know, taking myself, knock on wood, I've suffered very, very, very few injuries, if any, in my lifting, in my total 4 year competing at, you know, 3 years competing at a pro level, you know, in the IFBB. So I think training safe and smart and intelligent is your best bet. And then learn to create stability, learn to execute movements. And from there, you can really start driving intensity. But yeah, man, I really think that starting with the most neurologically taxing movements first, or those multi-joint compound movements are definitely the way to go all around.
Yeah, definitely. And in regards to warming up before a session, whether it be lower body or upper body, I think a lot of people's perception now of warm-up is changing a little bit compared to what it used to be, going from your static stretching and jumping on the treadmill for 5 minutes and feeling warmed up. How do you rate, or how highly do you rate a proper warm-up before, say, for example, a lower body workout?
So lower body's huge, especially because that's where most of us suffer our mobility issues, right? Because, you know, we sit all day long, and our hips and our pelvis and our hip flexors and everything else is just totally screwed by the end of the day, usually when we go train. So I think, you know, having a good warm-up, having maybe a 5 or 10 minute walk, which I personally walk to the gym, which takes me about 5 to 10 minutes. So that allows me that I don't have to spend the time on the treadmill when I get there. I can just walk straight into the gym and go through some type of mobility routine. You know, this is where Instagram has gotten really good, and where, you know, physiotherapists, like the mild detox crew, is amazing, and the work that they're doing is fantastic, and their ability to speak to the masses is incredible. So, you know, I don't know if you want to link those guys too to go check out just any practitioner physiotherapist on Myo Detox. I think is a good person to follow, and they show a lot of good mobility stuff.
Yeah, guys, I will put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah. And then I talk about priming the working muscles. So this is something I've learned from MI40. So are you familiar with MI40 gym in the US?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So MI40 is a very elite private personal training gym in Tampa, Florida. And I interned there over the last summer. worked for those guys, worked underneath those guys, and just was mentored, and that's why I've learned so much of my teachings and kind of what's helped propel my career up to this point. So I owe a huge debt to those guys. But where I learned priming the working muscle is from there. So, you know, we want whatever muscle group we're going in, let's say we're going in to train chest. A good idea when you first, after you warm up or, you know, raise your core body temperature, maybe wake up your central nervous system a little bit. I go into something like a cable fly to where I can get that muscle fully shortened, really start feeling out a good contraction. Because the first couple, like, you'll notice, especially if you don't do this, like, you'll notice it almost takes you that first exercise, excuse me, that first exercise or those first few sets of the exercise to sort of almost feel it, right? You're like, I'm like on my third set and I'm finally starting feeling my chest work, you know? Let's say you're doing bench press, you know, it takes you three sets to even feel your chest working, sort of wake things up. And that's what I like to do before I even start my first compound movement or my first exercise, you know? I really like cable flies, something to get my, you know, my chest shortened and fully contracted, and really just spend time in that contraction. And neurologically connect with it, connect with that working muscle,
learn
again what that feels like. And then you can sort of work around, wake up other muscles, auxiliary muscles, stabilization muscles around it. And that sort of wakes things up right away. And I usually, you know, do three or four sets of that, depending on what muscle group I'm hitting, and then just sort of move into my working sets of the first exercise.
Yeah, and guys, there's a distinct difference between the priming the muscle, which Austin's just spoke about, and actually doing an isolation exercise before you do bench press or before you do squats. So when he's doing this cable fly, he's not, you know, about to bust a nut and bloody and doing failure sets of cable flies. He's just, like you said, priming the muscle, warming up. Exactly right. Exactly right. Before we move on to some stuff about nutrition, what would be the biggest lifting mistake, I guess, that you see in the gym, or not so much lifting, but just training mistake in general that you see in the gym that you think could really benefit majority of people with their training and their results that they're seeing in regards to strength and muscle hypertrophy?
Yeah. And I think you know my answer to this, and it's going to be pretty obvious at this point, but execution is huge. You know, if you're just moving weight from point A to point B and there's not much thought going into it, and you're someone that just keeps suffering different injuries or just not growing, I think you need to reevaluate your training. You need to step back to that foundational principle of just simply doing the exercise correctly. So, you know, there's a lot of people that I think early on, you know, especially as this evidence-based community grows, which is so fantastic, but at the same time, it's sort of paralyzing some people because I think we're overthinking things at times. And you know, I have a bunch of beginner clients that come to me, they're like, well, I heard about this new DUP method, or I heard about all of this, what's this, 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 and this. And it's like, look, dude, we're starting very simple. I'm going to teach how to contract your muscles first. We're going to build a solid foundation for the next, could be 3-4 months. And then you just set yourself up by doing this preliminary work. You just set yourself up for the rest of your life to have success in your training. But if you skip that foundational phase, who knows where you're going to end up? Who knows where you're going to be? So I think execution over anything.
Yeah. And again, to the listeners, like we've spoke about this before, if you're lifting properly, you're in a good rep range for whatever you're trying to achieve, so whether it's strength, hypertrophy, and you're progressing over time, you're going to get results regardless of whether it's DUP, regardless of whether it's whatever it may be, guys, you're going to get results if you're progressing over time. So like Austin just said, it doesn't need to be as complicated as you are probably making it.
Start simpler and then progress.
Exactly. And it moves me perfectly into nutrition because it is exactly the same thing when it comes to nutrition. So I want to start off by just getting you to tell us, tell the listeners a bit about your philosophy on nutrition.
So I am wholeheartedly a flexible dieter. I guess that's what I label myself as. You know, I've been a part of the IFYM community for a while now, going on about 4 years. And I'm sort of on orthodox in manner, though, because I have a different approach, and I think health first, performance first, the way my body functions first, and then I think about what everyone else thinks about. So, you know, then the enjoyment of the food. So, I think, you know, you hear moderation and balance thrown around a lot, and I think from person to person, it's super relative to, you know, your past history or, you know, whether you suffer from binge eating, or, you know, there's a lot of things out there that, you know, are pretty devastating to people's psyche and eating habits. And, you know, I think just starting super simple, starting with, you know, that mentality of one ingredient foods, you know, and then progressing. So I think the basis of your nutrition plan or protocol should come from whole nutrient-dense foods, things that are going to fuel your health as a priority, and also fuel your training, and help you grow that muscle or lose that fat you want to lose or gain. And then we need to think about enjoyment. We need to think about adherence. We need to think about sustainability and consistency. Those things are also massive. I think you agree with me there as well.
Yeah, 100% agree. And as Austin said, guys, and we've spoken about it before, is it should always come down to health first. It's just like driving your car. You wouldn't put shit fuel in a car and expect your car to perform well.
Right.
It's exactly the same with your body. When it comes to a fat loss phase, how do you structure your calorie intake and your macronutrient breakdown? So let's say, for example, you've been in a calorie surplus or even at maintenance, and you decide you want to start to get a bit leaner and drop fat. How do you go about transitioning from a surplus or maintenance into a deficit?
Yeah, I think it kind of just changes person to person, and you know, you sort of hear a rule of this 10% deficit. You know, start with 10% up or down. You know, if so, if you're going into a fat loss, maybe cut calories by 10%. Either taking it from, you know, carbs or fats from the macronutrient side of things. So I think that's a good rule. I think it's a good place to start. And it's honestly just going to matter to how you're progressing from that. So I think that's a good starting point. So you're not taking too much away. At once, because that could be detrimental as well as we start, you know, getting into adaptive thermogenesis and making it harder for ourselves to lose fat down the road. You know, so I think that 10% rule is a good one, and, you know, I kind of like to stick by that just because it makes it easy and it's easy for people to understand and cope with. And at the biggest end of things, as I am a coach and, you know, you're a coach, we're also educators, and, you know, our jobs as coaches and educators is to hopefully that client doesn't have to keep coming back to us. Hopefully they can one day just do it on their own. And, you know, that's our ultimate goal. And so I think teaching those, having those sort of foundational markers, you could say, on which to kind of predicate things, decisions on, is one of your best bets. So, yes, so transitioning into a fat loss phase from maintenance, I think dropping calories 10%, taking those from fats or carbs, wherever you think they need to come from, in context to you or your training. You know, I think that's a great place to start, and then just see how you're progressing.
Yeah, awesome. It's something that I've observed with my online clients, but also with my personal training clients, in regards to protein macronutrient, is a client that comes to me will either be severely below where they need to be with their protein intake, or on the opposite end of the spectrum, way too high. That might be someone that's been lifting for a while and reading every different bodybuilding magazine and, and article on the internet, and they're way too high, or they're way too low. So, whereabouts do you sit in regards to protein, setting your protein, whether it be fat loss, maintenance, or calorie surplus?
Yeah, so I think too, sort of having that range, right, to give people, and sort of we have to take what the literature is saying as well. And I look at three different people when I kind of reference and talk about this that I sort of look up to for this information, and a lot of other information. So I know a big asset for me is just looking around at different guys, find those people you trust, and really just sort of evaluate what they're saying. So my three guys, when I think and talk about this are Menno Hintzelman, Eric Helms. I guess there's four. Alan Aragon. And I really like Ian McCarthy. I know Ian McCarthy's not one who has a massive name in the industry yet, but he is 100% probably one of the most logical and intelligent people in the industry right now that's giving evidence-based applicable advice that you can actually can apply. So those are my four I go to. And, you know, reading all of their materials and literatures, I would conclude, and this is what I use with my clients, anywhere from 0.8 to 1.4 grams per pound is where I like to stay. You know, females, usually on the lower end. If you're overweight, usually on the lower end. And if you're a male or a very lean individual, you're going to move more towards the higher end of that range.
Higher end, yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I know flexible dieting isn't usually paired with set meal times or frequency of meals and stuff like that. But are you an advocate for deliberate meal timing or frequency, even when it just comes down to structure of your nutrition, especially when you're in a contest prep or when you're in a fat loss phase, having some form of structure with meal timing, even if it's just before and after workouts?
Yeah. I think one thing that's the literature says what it says, and you know, it's given plus, you know, it's positives and negatives to either side of that story. Like, we know we don't need 8 meals, 9 meals a day to boost our metabolism. Like, we know that. But I also, I don't think it's advantageous to just have one meal or 2 meals in the day either.
Yeah.
So I like to tell clients, and this is what I've succeeded with myself, anywhere from 3 to 5 meals throughout the day, spaced out how you want them to be spaced out. And, you know, usually get the majority of your carbs pre and post workout. And then the other meals can just be higher protein and fat meals with lower carbs and our moderate carbs. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, hitting your totals and spacing those totals out throughout the day to just make sure you're staying consistent and adhering to your plan or protocol, I think is the biggest thing you can do for yourself and for your coach or, you know, whatever. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. So just stick with what you can. Create routine. I know routine is an excellent way to create that adherence or sustainability.
Yeah.
So if you're used to 4 or 5 meals in a day, stick with it. You know, and as of recent, I haven't always been a big fan of meal plans, and I still don't like you know, the sort of the attitude that's brought to meal plans. But I think as a whole, if you have, you know, your macronutrients you're supposed to eat, and you're fully aware that you can intelligently make decisions on your own
outside of that meal plan.
I think meal plans are fantastic because, especially if you're moving through a fat loss phase, and I'll be the first one to tell you, if I'm under 6 weeks out from the show, I have a meal plan because my life is hectic. I'm very scatterbrained. And I'm one of those people that literally forget to eat. And so I know, but it catches up with me at the end of the day if I forget to eat. So I need to make sure I have the structure and consistency, and I need to make sure that I'm getting the right nutrients at each meal to really help me feel best and fuel my training to help facilitate fat loss, you know, over the long haul.
Yeah, definitely. And stress and cortisol levels play a huge role in fat loss. So if, you know, for example, you aren't timing meals, or you aren't sticking to a specific meal plan as such, or even any real specific groups of foods that you tend to gravitate to, if what you're spending your time thinking about during the day is what you're going to be having for dinner or what you're going to be having for your next meal all day, every day, while you're trying to lose fat, then chances are your cortisol levels are going to be through the roof. You're going to be stressing. There's got plenty of other things that you're going to be thinking about as well. And it's just, it can play so much more of a role with not losing fat than I think most people really understand.
Yeah, I completely agree. Honestly, I think the more you get to know me as well, the less stress I can have in my life, the better. I mean, all about creating the most stress-free approach to any situation, any type of event that I do, or anything I approach, I try to think what is the least amount of stress that I can put on myself and still complete it, and I take that same approach to prep or fat loss. Phases. So just creating the lowest stress environment and putting those tools and plans in place to make sure that you not only achieve your goal, but you also can stay stress-free and human, basically. Exactly right.
All right, guys, before we wrap things up, I've got one more question for Austin. So I wanted you to tell us what you think are the most beneficial supplements for just an everyday gym goer who wants to see results, regardless of whether it's fat loss or muscle growth. What do you think are the most beneficial subs?
Yeah, so this is a good question. I think we might need to agree with me. I think we place too much emphasis on supplements, but at the end of the day, I honestly would probably put a protein supplement up there because I think as a whole in society, we really struggle with hitting protein goals. And you know, the more that I, even an experienced dieter, go through my day, and let's say I have to hit 220 grams of protein in a day, I have a very busy day, and if I don't have the protein shakes maybe to start the day and end the day, I'll never hit my protein goal.
And so I would say probably a protein supplement, something with the whey and casein blend in it, are always good. Research has shown positive things for overall effectiveness for MPS and everything else, with the whey and casein together. So I think that's a big one. And I think creatine is the next one to come up.
I don't think enough people utilize creatine, and I think there's still a big dogma around it, and I don't quite understand why.
Yeah, I get tons of questions asking me, should I be taking it, or is it going to have any negative effects? And I'm just like,
no.
Look at any. There's so much research about it now, and it's. I think it's the most, obviously, apart from protein, it's the most researched supplement.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think a good sort of recommend to people, because those are good starters, and I think for dosages, protein obviously take as needed. If you don't need help with hitting your protein goals, getting whey protein, there's no magic in the protein.
Exactly.
I get a lot of questions of, is because I'm not drinking protein, why I'm not achieving goals, and it's so context related, and I honestly can't tell you yes or no, because I don't know. And if you're hitting your protein goals, then no, protein's not going to help you. But if you really struggle day to day with hitting your protein, like, yes, get a protein supplement.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I get the typical what protein shake should I be having after the gym for doing muscle, or what shake should I be having to lose fat.
Yeah, and it's just drink something or eat something. I mean, that's all I can really tell you. It's that simple. And then creatine, I've seen probably the most easy to prescribe and to stick to thing that I've seen is take five grams most days of the week. So take five grams, at least five days a week, and you're good. So if you have two rest days, if you take creatine, go for it. If you don't, don't stress about it. So if you're training five days a week out of seven, maybe add it into your post-workout shake after training on those five days, and just call that a win, because the biggest thing was just consistency with creatine intake. And then just basically keep creating consistency with your intake.
Exactly right. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to have to wrap things up here, but I just wanted to say a big thanks for Austin for joining us today. Hopefully, we'll do another one at some stage, and hopefully, actually, while you're in Australia, we might do a bit of a YouTube collab or something at some stage. But yeah, thanks for joining us today, man.
Absolutely, man. I'm stoked to be on, and we'll definitely make that collab happen.
100%. Guys, as I mentioned, I'll put all Austin's social media links and stuff in the show notes, as well as the Myo Detox one. That'll be a good one for you guys to check out as well. If this is your first episode, I hope you've enjoyed it. Please do subscribe if you do like the episodes and check out some of the previous ones. Leave a review if you did like today's episode. And thanks, as always, for tuning in. I look forward to talking to you guys again next week. Hope you're having a great day.